ministry is supported by tithes and free will offerings. Please pray for Scriptures for America worldwide.
But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and this evening they're going to be the views of our guest, William Federer. Bill Federer is one of my favorite guests. He's written a number of wonderful books with a lot of history in them, and well, we're going to be talking about another one of his. It's really sort of an article you wrote recently, isn't it, Bill?
Yes, yes.
Well, you pick up the story.
Well, I had written an article for WorldNetDaily.com entitled "Trust Teddy Kennedy Again." And I bring out how it was Teddy Kennedy in 1965 that ushered through Lyndon Johnson's immigration bill. And prior to 1965, the majority of immigrants coming into the United States were from Europe. Actually, 70% of the immigrants came from three countries, United Kingdom, Ireland, and Germany. And the rest came from the other European nations. And they were educated and very similar economically and culturally, and so they assimilated very easily into America, and many of them tended to become Republicans. At the time, in 1965, Lyndon Johnson noticed that immigrants from poorer countries were less educated, tended to be more dependent on the government, and tended to become Democrats. And so Lyndon Johnson came up with this immigration change, and it was Teddy Kennedy that ushered it through the U.S. Senate. And here's an interesting speech that Teddy Kennedy gave February 10th, 1965. He said, "I want to comment on what this bill will not do. First, our cities will not be flooded with a million immigrants annually. Under the proposed bill, the present level of immigration remains substantially the same." Well, I think he was wrong there. Secondly, Kennedy goes on to say, "The ethnic mix of this country will not be upset. Contrary to the charges in some quarters, this bill will not inundate America with immigrants from any one country or area." Well, it seems he was wrong on that point. Kennedy goes on to say, again, this is 1965, he says, "Thirdly, the bill will not permit the entry of subversive groups, criminals, illiterates, and those with contagious diseases. As I noted a moment earlier, no immigrant visa will be issued to a person who is likely to become a public charge." And Kennedy promised, he said, "This bill will not flood our cities with immigrants, it will not upset the ethnic mix of society, it will not relax the standards of admission, and it will not cause American workers to lose jobs." Well, we can see that Teddy Kennedy wasn't right on his estimation there. And a couple of interesting points that I bring out in my article, Dr. Stan, is what I call Mexification. And I compare what happened in Lebanon and what happened in Tibet to what's going on in America today. And I hear the background music beginning, so maybe I should pick up this after the break.
All right, fine. But I think it's so important that people understand that Teddy Kennedy is not an honorable man. In 1986, they passed another immigration bill. That's when they, of course, they gave the amnesty to a 1.1 million illegal immigrants. The only trouble was there were almost 3 million immigrants. They promised to seal the border, to go after employers. None of the things would they do in 86 or in 96 or at the present time. Well, Bill, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, Lebanon was a country that was underneath of the control of France up until 1943. After World War I, the countries of Europe took control of other countries. Britain controlled Palestine and, of course, gave birth to Israel. They wanted America to take control of Armenia and protect it, and they didn't. And so 1.5 million Armenian Christians ended up getting killed. But France took the mandate for Lebanon and Syria. And in 1943, France gave Lebanon its independence. And so Lebanon set up a democracy. But they went through a process called Islamification. Muslims began to flood into Lebanon from surrounding countries. And the Muslims had higher birth rates because they could have four wives. And so, within a short amount of time, they were able to get control of the elections. And so, Lebanon, since 1943, has gone from an 80% Christian country to a 30% Christian country through this process of Islamification, the massive immigration of Muslims with the higher birth rates. Another instance is Tibet. Tibet is a small country between China and India. There are three provinces. China took over two of the provinces. The third one has been holding out. It has been resisting unification with China. And so China has resorted to a process called Sinofication. Sino being a word for China. And Sinofication is the forced immigration of Chinese into Tibet. And lo and behold, as the percentage of Chinese in Tibet increases, resistance to unification with China decreases. And so when we look at Lebanon and Tibet with the Islamification and the Sinofication, we see that we're undergoing a Mexification. In other words, that the immigrants that come across the border, 20 million of them now, if they are granted a path to citizenship, they're really granted a path to Democrat vote. And imagine 20 million more Democrat votes in America, and with chain migration and higher birth rates, we can see a permanent Democrat party in America. Plus, with so many in the Republican base being upset at this bill being brought back by the president.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We'll be... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and the bill is simply talking about the Mexification of America. And, of course, if this legislation is to pass, and there are probably closer to 20 million illegal immigrants, we know in 1986, they guaranteed there was only 1.1 million illegal immigrants, and turned out there were almost 3%, over 3%. Now they claim there are 11 million. Some people say it's 20 or 30 million. Nobody knows. They're not going to tell us the truth. But if they are able to get through this bill, which is an amnesty bill, which is intent upon creating a multicultural, multilingual society, because the traitors who are behind this want to do away with the sovereignty of our country and merge America first with Mexico and then with Central America and then with South America and then the rest of the world. So the Mexification of the United States really is taking place right at the present time and will be determined by the outcome of this legislation. And even though most of the senators don't want to vote for it, the president is bullying them and twisting their arm and bribing them. Gee, I thought we had representative government, not government by a dictator. But go ahead, pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, you're talking very accurately, Dr. Stan, about the situation. The path to citizenship for 20 million people from Mexico will probably be a path to Democrat votes. So we're talking about Teddy Kennedy pushing 20 million more Democrat votes who will vote for higher taxes, more government benefits, I mean, basically bankrupting the country. And then secondly, many in the Republican base are so upset about this amnesty bill, this path to citizenship, whatever it's called, that they will probably be disheartened to support any Republican nominee for president. And so we're talking, well, who's going to be chosen, who's going to be chosen, who's going to be chosen? There are a lot of people that are just saying, look, I voted for them and, before, and they've changed their tune, and so I'm just disgusted and not going to get involved. And if that happens, then we will see a Hillary presidency, and Hillary will take us from the frying pan into the fire. She will push for gay marriage and abortion and gun control and the fairness doctrine, so that talk shows like this will have to have the, you know, give equal time to the other side. I was shocked, Dr. Stan, that the there's a Christian television network in Canada called 100 Huntley Street. And I remember when it was being started, at about the same time that the 700 Club was being started in America. And this Christian minister up there, I mean, he worked so hard to build this. Guess what? They passed a law in Canada saying that 100 Huntley Street had to offer time to the Muslims and to the Buddhists and to the Hindus. So here's a Christian station built with Christian donations, forced by the government to have Muslim programs in Arabic on their station. And that's what they would, well, that's exactly what Hillary would do in America. And then we will see, imagine all the people that are having talk shows will be very upset at Hillary and the government and begin to talk about it. And then you'll have some that are, will advocate armed resistance. And they may not even do anything, but imagine if a dirty bomb goes off or some terrorist attack and Hillary decides to blame it on people on the right, and all the Katie Couric's, like she did with, you know, maligning Dr. Dobson, the media will love to slam the right, and then all the new Homeland Security powers that have been given to the government will be used to keep track of you and me. And we can see the freedoms that we have disappear relatively quickly. But anyway, back to the situation of Mexification. I mentioned how it was through the massive immigration that Lebanon went from a Christian country to a Muslim country. It was through forced immigration that Tibet is losing its resistance to being united with China. With the massive immigration from Mexico, we're seeing that not only will there be more Democrat votes, but it will lessen resistance to the North American Union. The unification of Canada and the United States and Mexico. The plan is to have a similar situation to Europe with the EU. You know, Germany was not crying out to be united with France. Italians were not crying out to be united with Portuguese. This was not the people pushing that agenda. It was a top-down imposed program by the financial elites in Europe to institute the EU. Once it has been instituted, fully 80% of the laws in those countries are made by the EU, not the people in the country. And so they've basically lost their sovereignty. And their plan is to have 10 or 12 of these major trading blocks around the world. If anybody goes to Wikipedia.com and type in trade blocks, you'll see a list of all the trade agreements around the world and a graph at the bottom that says, travel without a visa, common currency accepted, and then one says borderless, and so you can see that the plan, according to the NAFTA and the GATT and all those different treaties, is to have the United States, for all practical purposes, be united with Mexico and Canada. Now, we'll still keep our name, like Germany still keeps its name, but the laws will be less and less made by our representatives, and would be more and more made by appointed people of the governing boards of these overriding trade agreements.
And but I would just like to interrupt one thing, Bill, and that is one of the major forces behind this European Union and the trading blocs throughout the world and this idea of eventually trying to unite them is the United States. We have been pushing the European Union ever since the Second World War. It was the dream of people in the United States within the internationalist movement, the Council on Foreign Relations, and later on the Bilderbergers and trilateralists. But the major driving force behind the EU is right here. And then, of course, the same forces behind the move towards the Security and Prosperity Partnership here, behind the North American Union, and really financing and encouraging these trade blocs throughout the whole world. It is a dream. It is an idea. It's an idea of a one-world government, a one-world religion, a one-world ruler. And that's really what they want.
Yeah, and so people need to be listening to these programs really good, because you may not be able to listen to them very much longer if they get their way. So, but you're exactly right, because going back to the Mexican immigration situation, when did it really begin? Well, it began with NAFTA and GATT, the North American Free Trade Agreement and the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade. Those were passed in the Bill Clinton's administration, but voted for by Democrats and Republicans in the year 1993 and 1994. NAFTA and GATT not only allowed cheap foreign goods to be brought into America, it allowed cheap foreign goods to be brought into Mexico. And so these international conglomerates, these big, huge international businesses, were allowed to bring cheap Chinese goods into Mexico and sell them cheaper than the Mexican manufacturers could make them themselves. And so it put out of business tens of thousands of Mexican manufacturers. And then it allowed these international grain companies to sell their grain and their tortillas in Mexico cheaper than the little Mexican subsistence farmers could grow their own grain and take their bag of corn into the market and try to sell it, and they couldn't sell it because they could go to these big market stores and buy the tortillas cheaper than the guy could sell his little corn. So it put out of business hundreds of thousands of Mexican farms and displaced millions of Mexican workers. And then investment dollars began to leave Mexico because of all this loss of business, and so the Mexican government devalued the peso. They made the peso worth half in 1995. And so what that meant was that a Mexican holding a peso could now buy half of what he could buy before of goods from America or other countries. I mean, they just robbed these poor of their savings. Their savings were worth half. But it allowed foreign countries to be able to buy twice as much Mexican good from these big conglomerates. And so all that put together caused millions of Mexicans to be out of work, and they began to migrate north and then cross into America. So we basically created the problem by passing NAFTA and GATT. Now, why do the government of Mexico allow the illegal immigrants to come across the border? Two reasons. Number one, the history of Mexico is the history of the rich and the poor, where the history of America is the history of the middle class. America wasn't founded by the royalty of Europe. America was founded by what they call the second sons, the ones that had no inheritance over there, so they struck out to come over here. It was the educated religious dissidents that came over to found our country. Mexico was not like that. Mexico was the poor Indians and the rich Spanish royalty, and the dukes and the lords and so forth would come across, and they would get their big plantations, and they would claim ownership of the slaves that happened to be, those Indians that happened to be on those plantations. You contrast that to William Penn, who was given Pennsylvania as his personal property, and instead of saying that he owned all the Indians there, he treated them as equals, bought the land at a fair price, and then invited religious dissidents to join his holy experiment. In Mexico, these rich lords got their land, and for 300 years, from 1521 to 1821, they ruled with an iron fist. And I hear the music in the background, so I'll pick up after the break.
All right, you hold on. We'll be right back. Our guest today is William Federer, one of my favorite guests, and I hope yours as well. Go right ahead, Bill.
Well, so Mexico's the story of the rich and the poor. In 1810, Napoleon put his brother on the throne of Spain.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
The other thing. So, go ahead, pick this story up.
So, we see that not only are they working cheaper and therefore taking jobs from anybody that wants to do them, but they're draining money from the economy and sending it out. Now, there's another economic reason why illegal aliens are coming up, and there is no effort on Mexico's government to stop it, and that's drug traffic. It is a multi-billion dollar industry, and it is money that flows into Mexico. They call it the Colombianization of Mexico, whereas Colombia has its biggest crop of cocaine. You know, Afghanistan has a big crop of poppies, you know, where opium comes from. And so the drug money ends up buying off the politicians, and the politicians don't want to stop it. There's actually whole provinces, whole states in Mexico that are run by gangs, drug gangs, and they're right along our border. And so we see a situation, you know, like Oklahoma. The state of Oklahoma is very conservative. It's in the Bible Belt. But because of the Indian casinos, gambling casinos have funneled money to Democrat candidates. So the Democrat candidates vote more for casinos. But the Democrat candidates also bring their Democrat agenda of the homosexual agenda, the abortion, the gay rights, all those different things, gun control. And so here you have a very conservative state with very liberal politicians. In Mexico, it's sort of the same way. You have the grassroots people are just trying to make a living, and they're decent people. But you have politicians that have been given a lot of drug money and a lot of, you know, bribes. People that do business in Mexico say that it's bribery up and down the ladder. Somebody gets stopped by a policeman, and if you bribe the policeman, you get off. If you don't bribe the policeman, you wind up in jail. And then the policemen have to bribe their boss to keep their job, and their boss has to bribe their boss to keep their job, and everybody bribes everybody, and that's just sort of the way the government works. And so we see that the politicians in Mexico have no motivation to stop the illegal immigrants because, number one, it stops potential revolutionaries from staying there, and number two, it allows money to be sent back in the form of remittances and drug traffic. And so what we're seeing, not only is there a global intent, an Islamification, a Sinofication, a Mexification, so the more immigrants that come across reduce the resistance to having a North American Union, but it's also in the best interest of the businesses. And to compound that, the same GATT and NAFTA that allowed cheap goods to go into Mexico and put the Mexican businesses out of business, those same GATT and NAFTA have allowed the less expensive goods to come into the United States. And so all the businesses that couldn't compete have either left the country and gone to China, or the ones that could not leave, like farmers, I mean, they can't pick up their farm and move it. The farmers, they need to have cheaper labor in order to stay in business. So you have good, patriotic American farmers that are saying, look, if I'm going to compete with all these foreign foods that are being brought in from, you know, thankfully they're discovering some of the foods brought in from China may not pass FDA, quality standards, and so that may discourage that. But here we have American farmers who are very patriotic, but they're between a rock and a hard place needing cheap labor. And so we have... we've created the need and filled it. You know, I mean, we've caused the problem of the, but who's getting rich off it all is the internationalists, the same ones that set up the EU and so forth. So we see this, we're between a rock and a hard place. But I want to point out something. What's different with immigrants coming over today than immigrants that came over 100 years ago? Everybody says, well, yeah, we're all children of immigrants, so we should allow more immigrants in. 100 years ago, when immigrants came to America, there were zero social services. They couldn't bring their baby that was sick to the emergency room. They couldn't get free education for their kids and free medical care and free retirement and Social Security and all those different type of benefits. Today, when an immigrant comes over, and by the way, back then, churches and charities were the social net. And so they were the ones to rush in and help the...
Hold that thought right there, Bill, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bill Federer. And, of course, the point is that this is an entirely different America than it was 50 or 100 years ago. You know, 50 years ago, we did not have a socialist America. You could not get free health care. You could not, because anybody can go to the hospital and get free health care. And we did not have food stamps. We did not have subsidized housing. We did not have free education for foreigners coming in. If you came into this country, you had to work. You could not get onto welfare, and yet, of course, you can today. So this, of course, simply means that everybody who comes in is a potential addition to the financial load on our country, and, of course, will help in its ultimate demise. So pick the story up there, Bill.
Well, and another thing is back then they did not have minimum wage. And so everybody that came across could get a job. And you think, well, how does that work into it? Well, if you had a farm and you needed help, but you had to pay minimum wage and you didn't have money to, you're up a creek. But if there is no minimum wage and an immigrant comes across, he can't speak English. But he can do odd jobs, and so he comes and he works on your farm for a quarter a day. But he's learning the language, and he's learning a skill, and he'll live with his family and his extended family, and they'll all pool their money, and they'll get by. It's a tough life, but after a while, they begin to learn the language, and they begin to learn how a business works, and then they start their own restaurant, and their own cleaners, and their own business, and their own farm. And they would get ahead, and so it would push everybody else up the economic ladder. And so every wave of immigrants helped our economy to grow. You know, for example, if you decided you want to start a car wash business in your driveway, and, you know, you could wash maybe 10 cars a day. If you had to, and you're charging $5 a car, it takes you an hour to do one. If you had to pay $7 minimum wage to have somebody help you, you'd be paying out more than you were bringing in, and so you couldn't start your business. But if somebody that couldn't speak the language said, look, I'll work for $2, and you can, they work a little slower, but you can teach them the language, teach them a skill, and after a while, they learn how to do it, their friends all work for you, and then they end up starting their own business. And so you win, and they win. But today, with minimum wage, can't afford to hire it, and so that's created the need for this underground labor pool. People don't realize that if...
Hold up the right there, Bill. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill is just pointing out the fact that, you know, originally when people came to this country, they had to be competitive. We did not have a social welfare network. We did not have minimum wage. People had to come here and get a job. Today, they can come, they can get onto welfare, they can get food stamps, they can get free care, health care, they can get a free education for the kids, subsidized college education. What sort of madness is this? No other country in the world would do this. And, of course, this is being done here because there really are people who want to destroy our economy. They're not interested in the Mexicans or the immigrants. They are, however, interested in bankrupting America. Go ahead.
Well, the people don't realize that if these illegal immigrants become citizens, then they will be unionized, and they will be working for union wages, and so people won't be able to hire them anymore. And so they will still be here, and they will still be using the free social services. For example, if an immigrant comes over today, they get to bring their kids to the emergency room. And emergency rooms all across the nation are filling up. And with illegal immigrants, half of the kids born in Los Angeles, I'm being told, are illegal immigrant children in the emergency room. And so the and then the free schools, and then the increased amount of money that goes into law enforcement because a lot of the gangs that are coming up. Bill Clinton trained a lot of Mexican police officers to help crack down on the drug traffic. And after our military trained them with the best training in the world, they defected and began to work for the drug cartels. And so now they are starting these very serious military drug cartels that we have trained. And anyway, so we're putting more money into law enforcement. And we are giving out these free services, but the illegal immigrants largely operate on a cash economy. So they're obviously not paying income tax. They don't have Social Security. They're not registered, so they're not paying for that. They're avoiding a lot of other taxes by having a cash economy. So we see that they are using social services, but not contributing to pay for those social services. That's different than 100 years ago. 100 years ago, there was no social services, and all they could do was contribute with their cheap labor. And so we see that the middle class is having to compete with the cheaper wages, but the middle class now has to pay more in taxes to pay for the increased social use of the free services, and it is a prescription for disaster. And it's very similar to the fall of Rome. And Rome, in 476 AD, began to be overrun with illegal immigrants. They were the Ostrogoths and the Visigoths and the Anglos and the Saxons and the Jutes and the Lombards, and these different groups would come across. First, they came across slowly, and they would work as servants. Matter of fact, many in the Slavic Eastern European countries were brought in to work as servants, and so many of them did that the word Slav took the connotation of servant. Of course, today we pronounce the word slave, but that's where the word slave came from, was the Romans had brought in these Slavs, these people across the border to work in their homes and so forth, in their farms. And at first they came slow enough that they assimilated, they learned the Latin language, but then they began to come so fast and in such large numbers that they didn't learn the Latin language. And they kept their own German, French, Anglo language, and this broke up the unity of the Roman Empire. Matter of fact, they call them Romance languages or Romantic languages because it was like a Tex-Mex mix. They would take a little German and mix it with Latin, and a little French mix it with Latin, and Romanian and mix it with Latin, and Portuguese and mix it with Latin. And so all those languages have similar conjugations and, you know, the you, me, us type of sentence structures and so forth. So they call them, that they have the Roman root to them, so they call them Romantic languages. But nevertheless, it was no longer Latin. And so that broke up the unity of the empire. And then a couple other interesting comparisons that we've gone over before is that Rome had its military stretched around the world, putting out global fires from Britain to North Africa. So Rome had to raise taxes to pay for this extended military. The military was highly mobile. Because of their road system, they could move it anywhere from one end of the empire to the other very quickly. But it was small in numbers, so it could not sustain long and drawn-out engagements, like over in Masada and in the Middle East. And it's funny because Rome got stuck over in the Middle East. they had welfare. The whole city of Rome was on welfare. They would give out free bread. It's called bread and circuses. They'd have violent entertainment in the Colosseums and the circuses to keep people preoccupied, sort of like their American Idol and all the violent entertainment on television. Morally, they were bankrupt. They had exposure of unwanted infants. If a mother bore a child, she'd lay it at the father's feet. If he picked it up and liked it, they'd keep it. If not, the mother'd have to get rid of it and would put it in some pagan temple or out in the woods, and the early Christians would hear those babies crying and rescue a lot of them. Some became great preachers. But they were morally decadent. They had their homosexual bathhouses. I actually went to school in Rome for 6 months in college, and we toured the ruins where under the floor the slaves would stoke the fires to keep the jacuzzis bubbling. They had their gymnasiums, and people say, well, what's wrong with a gymnasium? Well, gym, G-Y-M, is the Greek word for naked. And so a gymnasium was where a bunch of naked men ran around. And Jews and a lot of Christians wouldn't go in there because they were circumcised, and it sort of showed up. And anyway, in Pompeii, for example, it was so morally depraved that they still have the murals on the walls of the specialties of the different prostitutes. And, of course, Pompeii was buried in ash when Mount Vesuvius, the volcano, erupted. But we can see that Rome was morally decadent on the inside and being overrun with illegal immigrants from the outside, and its military stretched and its taxes gone up. And they had outsourced all their grain production to North Africa. That was the grain basket. And so when Rome began to be overrun by these illegal immigrants, one of the tribes was called the Vandals. You can imagine what they did when they went through town. They vandalized. Well, they went through Spain into North Africa, captured the grain fields and cut them off so that Rome was brought to its knees, didn't have the goods, the resources to mount a counterattack, similar to if China decided to cut off all of its supplies, all of our department store shelves would be empty. And then Rome began to have terrorist attacks. Attila the Hun would come in and wipe out whole cities of 75,000 people. And one 5th century historian, Salvian, said, the Goths lie but are chaste. The Saxons are savage in cruelty but admirable in chastity. What hope can there be for the Romans when the barbarians are more pure than they? O Roman people, be ashamed of your lives. Almost no cities are free of evil dens. He says, let no one think otherwise. The vices of our bad lives have alone destroyed us. And so he's the old saying is that Rome fell from the inside, that they lost their sense of identity as a nation, they lost their patriotism, they were overrun, and they were immorally bankrupt. And the Christian church existed at the time, but it was unable to check the moral decline. And if there is one encouraging thing out of all that story is that Rome fell, but the church didn't, and the church continued. And so as much as I love America, and I'll spend my last dying breath trying to keep America alive and strong, the Church of Jesus Christ, and I believe in Jesus, would last through any empire rising or falling. And, there have been 6,000 years of recorded human history. Empires have risen. Empires have fallen. It's interesting. Rome never thought it would fall, but it did. The Byzantine Empire never thought that it would fall, but it did. You see, the Alexander the Great ruled the world for a while. The Romans ruled the world for a while. The Egyptians ruled the world. The Genghis Khan and the Mongolians had the largest contiguous land empire in the world for a while. And I liken it to an athlete. An athlete works hard, trains, is very focused, and finally wins the championship. And he rules for a while, and then he becomes lazy, becomes a couch potato, gets his spare tire around his middle. In his mind, he thinks he's still that young, strong athlete, but when another challenger steps into the ring and challenges him, and he waddles off the couch and says that he can go in there and beat him, he's in for a rude awakening. And I think America, during the era of Teddy Roosevelt and World War II, we were very focused, very patriotic, very willing to sacrifice, had our Judeo-Christian foundations and roots, but we've become a couch potato. We've indulged in all kinds of immorality, and with all the multiculturalism and the ACLU stripping away our moral fiber, there's very little patriotism to speak of other than listeners to your program, Dr. Stan. And so we see that here we are with a new challenger in the ring, with the Muslims, with the Chinese, with, this illegal immigration situation, and we're getting off of our couch and we're saying, well, we can take on another problem. And, my question is if we don't do something about this immediately, within the next couple of weeks, if this does pass and the president does sign it, then we can see 20 million more Democrat votes. We can see a very disheartened Republican base, so we could potentially see a Hillary in the White House. And I don't have to repeat all the stuff that she would do if she got in. So we're really seeing that all these great freedoms we have are at a precarious precarious place. And I'm 50 years old. I want to be able to pass on to my kids as good of a country as I've inherited, and it's going to be tough. But I do believe that that the good Lord that we still acknowledge on our coins, even though the new dollar has him on the rim instead of on the face, that he's still there, and he is looking to see how we respond, and we still can turn this around through prayer and action. And anyway, I know I've sort of got a little preachy here at the end, Dr. Stan, but it is a time that we do need to get involved.
Well, I certainly won't disagree with you, nor will I be critical, because you're getting a little preachy, because, of course, it is our contention. This is really a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And I think your analogy to what happened in ancient Rome is so applicable today, because, of course, Rome really became totally pagan, and America has become a pagan nation. You can only watch television today and see the emphasis on sex, on immorality. I mean, all of the, nobody ever questions that it isn't right to have premarital sex. God is constantly being derided. God and mention of God has been taken out of our schools, and yet in many of our schools today, they've introduced the Buddhist practices of having the bells ring. Yoga practices, yoga exercises, breathing exercises.
Oh, in Michigan, they just passed the state putting 2 wash basins in for Muslims to wash their feet before their prayer services on the pamphlet with tax money. Boy, they wouldn't do anything like that for Christians.
No, they certainly wouldn't. Well, you have to understand that there really are people here who hate Christianity. When you understand that, so much of what's going on really does make sense. And you really can only understand it when you understand that there are organizations out there that are dedicated to the destruction of Christianity. And they have regular meetings. They put out publications. There are, frankly, Luciferian organizations like the Lucius Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. You can go up on their website. You can pull down the material. You can go to some of their front organizations like the New Group of World Servers, and you will find some of the most powerful foundations in the world financing the Lucius Trust front organizations. So, little wonder where we are today. So, the question is, Bill, what can the listener do?
Well, first of all, I wanted to point out that we can't be thankful for one thing, and that's that the illegal immigrants that are coming across the border have Hispanic Catholic roots, as compared to Europe, where the immigrants coming in are Muslim. A friend of mine that I met is named Gerard Batten. He's a member of the EU Parliament, and he's from London. He's a member of the Independence Party. That's the party that wants to break from the EU. And he shared with me a poll, and the poll this year said that the Muslims that came to England 30 years ago were more peaceful. They were, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. They realized they were a minority, and they just decided to not make waves. Well, the young Muslims that have been born in England are saying, well, we've been born here. We have just as much of a right to have our views heard. And they've found out that over half of the young Muslims want Sharia law in England. They want women to wear the burqas. They want the death penalty for a kafir, an infidel, somebody that backslides from Islam. And they have a higher birth rate. Muslims can have 4 wives, and the British, they have abortion over there as well, and they have a very declining birth rate. And so they estimate that the demographics show that within the next 30 years, the Muslims will gain a majority in the population if the immigration and the birth rate stay at the same rate. And so the concern is that these Sharia Muslims are not going to want to pay taxes, which will go to paying the retirement of a bunch of infidels. And Gerard Batten was sharing with me, because he campaigned And there was a moderate Muslim that was campaigning with him, and they were at some event, and the violent Muslims came up to the moderate Muslim and said, "We're going to kill you because you're participating in the Democrat process and you're making yourself out to be higher than God or higher than Allah, because only Allah can make the laws, and in a democracy you're making the laws, and so you're putting yourself higher than Allah." And so we see that when a moderate Muslim can only be a moderate Muslim in a basically in a non-Muslim country. Once a country becomes a majority Muslim, the tendency is for the violent Muslims to pressure the moderate ones into becoming either violent or they threaten them. So anyway, long story short, we see the immigration flooding Europe, but it is Muslim immigration. And although something needs to be done about our borders, the one thing that we can be thankful for is that they have a Catholic route rather than a Muslim route. And anyway, I hear the music in the background, Dr.
Well, our guest has been William Federer. I hope you've enjoyed his presentation. I have. There's a lot of wisdom there. A lot of very, very important points. Well, Bill, would you like to give out your web page so people would know how to get in touch with you?
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. My website's AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And my telephone is 1-888-USA-WORD. That's 1-888-USA-WORD. A couple of the books that I've written, one is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. Another new book called The Original 13, A Documentary History of Religion in America's First 13 Colonies. And then another one called The Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion. And also, I've done that new article on the worldnetdaily.com. You can type in Federer or Teddy Kennedy, and it'll pull up the article. But, Dr. Stan, it's always an honor to be on your program, and I appreciate you bringing up stuff that doesn't get brought up in the mainstream news. And I do believe that we can still turn it around. The Americans have made it through lots of crises, but it's a time that we need to act now. To turn it around rather than later.
I agree with you totally, and I think you're doing a great job of getting onto radio and sharing your ideas with others, certainly for our listeners out there. I think William is one of the clearest thinkers we have in the conservative Christian movement, and believe me, there's a real paucity of them today. Well, William, certainly we want to encourage people to get your books, and of course, one of the books I really enjoy is America's God and Country. What about your Christian Minute? How does that work?
I have an American Minute. It's a short little historical vignette that is for every single day of the year. And there's one for today, one for tomorrow. So you can go to my website, AmericanMinute.com, and put your email address in, and you'll get it in your inbox every day. If you ever get tired, just go back and click and take your email off, but it goes out to around 10,000 people a day, and then there's other websites that put the little link on there. I don't know how the web guys do it, but they put this little code in their website, and My American Minute will show up somewhere on their website every day. So people can go to another website, but you can all figure out how to do that on AmericanMinute.com, and I have them recorded for radio and for TV. I've been recording them for TV. Matter of fact, I've been speaking around the country. This past Monday night, I spoke in the U.S. Capitol at a
I'm going to have to let you go. We're out of time. Good night. God bless. And thanks very much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Great program. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was William Federer. I hope you enjoyed our program with him. Well, this is Dr. Stan. That was William Federer, certainly one of my favorite guests. And again, his website is www.AmericanMinute.com. AmericanMinute.com. You can go to our website and pull down the books. We probably carry four or five of his books. But if you don't have America's God and Country, you should have that. And his books on, certainly on George Washington Carver, his books on St. Nicholas and Is There a Santa Claus. So many great books that you would want to get for yourself or for your family. Well, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really depend upon those of you who are listening to us on a regular basis and who agree with our contention to help. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, it's as easy as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927, and you can either join the Radio Liberty family and get our four best tapes or CDs of the month and our newsletter, or simply get our newsletter. If you'd like a free newsletter, give us a call. And then, of course, we like to suggest some of the things we think are so important, especially in times like this. Why are we fighting over in Iraq today? Why are we fighting in Afghanistan today? You need to hear my talk, Iraq, the Untold Story. Now, it's really a history of all of the wars of the last century. All of them were contrived. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident, and 58,000 Americans and 1 million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese died for absolutely nothing. But you need to know the truth about the Second World War. You need to know that the Japanese tried to surrender 6 months before the war ended, and we wouldn't let them, and the invasion of Okinawa and Iwo Jima and the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were unnecessary. And when you get the syllabus that goes with the talk, you'll see the article from the Chicago Tribune on August 15th, 1945, the day the peace treaty was signed on the battleship Missouri in the Tokyo Harbor, saying that the Japanese have been trying to surrender and we wouldn't let them. You must understand that the war was fought intentionally to prolong it, and I had the opportunity of talking to the chief of planning for the European segment of the war, Albert Wedemeyer. We tell that story and how it was Churchill who wanted to prolong the war. But why? Because he was a Druid, because he was a Mason, because he wanted to do in the Second World War what he did in the First World War. In the First World War, he insisted on the invasion of Gallipoli over by Turkey against the advice of his military advisors, and 200,000 British soldiers fell. And he insisted on the invasion of North Africa and Sicily and Italy during the Second World War, intentionally to prolong it. You must understand there's evil in the world. The talk, Iraq, the Untold Story. And it's a story of all the wars, and the syllabus is so important. You need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret with the syllabus, my talk on Brotherhood of Darkness with a book for verification. You need to get, of course, my talk on the Hidden Agenda, gets you into population control and water fluoridation. You need to get my, and a DVD that goes with that. You need to get our talk on planned population reduction, or the shorter version, none dare call it genocide. There are genocidal programs being carried out today. And if you wonder why we're seeing so much Alzheimer's disease in young people, or a dramatic increase of cancer from 3 in 100 to 50 in 100, not happening by accident, understand there are people who have a different agenda, who have a different worldview. So we ask you to call us at 1-800-544-8927, to go to our webpage, to pray for America, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Ron Brown. I should say this evening is Ron Brown, and he's in the gold and silver business, and he does support Radio Liberty, and we certainly appreciate having him on. Ron, how are things back there in Boston?
Well, I'm back from Boston. I'm back in Colorado Springs, so... But I had a real good time in Boston.
All right, very good. Well, I know you had an evening with one of our mutual friends. Anyway, we're going to be talking about what's happening financially. And I think it should be so obvious to our regular listeners that as interest rates are being raised throughout the world, they have to raise interest rates in the United States. And, of course, even though the Fed has not raised interest rates, we see the interest rates on long-term bonds rising, and the interest rates for money for housing rising. And with that comes the early stages of the contraction of the economy. And, of course, when an economy that has been certainly as vibrant as ours begins to contract, initially people don't quite understand what's happening. But what it means is, of course, that prices are going to be going up higher. More and more people are going to lose their jobs. It's going to be harder and harder to borrow money. The housing market is going to implode. The hedge funds will find it more and more difficult to leverage money. And as they begin to contract, and since they ordinarily are leveraged so highly, why more and more are they going to begin to collapse? And as they do, they can create a cascading effect. And with that as a background, Ron, my voice isn't very good, so you're going to have to carry most of the program. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, it's good minds must think alike, because when I was thinking about what we needed to talk about tonight, it was bond market and the U.S. dollar, and that's exactly what you started out with. So, you know, the Federal Reserve or the bankers are between a rock and a hard place in the U.S. because our money system is based on nothing but debt. So as I've described it so many times in the past, it's become a Ponzi scheme in that you have to keep it growing at all times. You can never let it contract. What you were just talking about is the final contraction of that system, which is going to ultimately create havoc throughout the whole system. But the Fed has to keep interest rates low to keep the real estate bubble going, and yet, in fact, I was reading before we went on the air that the percent of U.S. Treasury bonds held by foreigners now is approaching 50%. So the foreigners own 50% of our bonds, and the dollar has been down, what, 30%, 37% over the last 5 years. So if you're holding U.S. Treasury bonds and the dollar, purchasing power of the dollar is down 37%, you're really not very happy with your investment anymore. So the whole world is bloated with holding our treasury paper in order to keep their trade going with us and to keep the system afloat, and yet it's reaching the end game where all bubbles eventually reach where you just can't keep it going anymore. And I think that's exactly what's happening in America right now. In fact, the whole world.
Well, I think we have to realize the whole world is on a fiat money system. It's on a paper money system, and eventually the paper money system goes to the value of paper. That's all. And eventually, and we're talking about having happened many times before in the Weimar Republic, certainly in the original Continental Congress, issued paper money after the French Revolution, recently in Rhodesia, it happened in Argentina, and it's going to happen here. It's going to happen worldwide. All of the currencies are going to have to be devalued. And, of course, the people who have a dollar or paper assets, they might even be in other currencies, but they're all going to be badly hurt and many people be wiped out. Our plea to you is understand what's happening and begin to prepare for difficult times. Well, Ron, why don't you go right ahead and pick the story up?
Well, you know, all bubbles start off the same way. When you pump money into a system, it creates prosperity and excitement, and people are happy with it. and then that prosperity turns to euphoria and greed, and eventually it runs its course, and you have malinvestments, and then the bubble pops. You know, we saw that happen in the dot-com bubble back in the 90s. People were just getting filthy rich on the dot-com stocks. It was so euphoric that they couldn't see that it could ever end. I remember them talking about it's a new era now. Things are different now. We don't have to look at value or anything like that. And, of course, when that bubble popped right after the beginning of year 2000, people lost 50, 60, 70, 80% of their investments, and it just caught them by total surprise. And so to offset that bubble, the Fed had to step in and help create the real estate bubble, and people were making so much money on that the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years that they thought that could never end. People were going out and taking the equity in their houses and buying spec houses, and of course the same thing happened. It returned to euphoria. Now it's sad to see what's happening with all these people that invested in low interest, no money down, interest only loans. All of a sudden, the real estate has dropped way below what they could ever sell the house for, so they're kind of trapped in it right now. In fact, I was talking to a client out in California today. You know who she is. I won't mention her name, but she was saying that one bank in Marietta, California, now has 2,700 loans going into foreclosure.
Oh, boy. That's a
and she even mentioned Temecula had 66 homes going to foreclosure in May alone, and Temecula, she said, is only a 90,000 population. So you can see there's a lot of damage and a lot of pain being inflicted right now on the people that invested unwisely over their head in these real estate when it was made so easy for them to get in over their head, and now it's coming back to punish them.
Well, on the other hand, of course, a lot of the people in the construction business have been building spec homes. You know, in other words, we're going to borrow the money, build a home, and then we'll sell it, make a lot more money. And it's been working real well up until recently. And now, literally, there are hundreds of thousands of these spec homes on the market, and nobody can afford to buy them.
Right. And, you know, and it goes through a phase where, for a period of time...
Oh, hold that right there. Hold that for just a moment, Rod. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Ron Brown. We're talking about the housing market and how the housing bubble is broken. Now, not every place. Some places, it's the prices of houses are still going up, but it's taking longer and longer to sell them. But in many areas, they're not moving at all, and in some areas, they're simply having to be dropped dramatically in price to sell, which means, of course, that people who own those houses or put the money out to build them are beginning to lose money. And a lot of the big builders, their stocks are way down. We're talking some of them losing tens of millions of dollars every quarter. Go right ahead.
You know, and when a real estate market peaks, you go through a period of time where the market gets stale and dormant, and nothing's moving, yet the prices tend to stay up there because people aren't ready to lower their prices. They're not desperate enough yet. But eventually you're going to have one big player. I remember back in the early 80s, it was a big builder in Houston who couldn't take the pain anymore. He had hundreds of houses, like you were talking about, built for spec, and they weren't selling. And when you start floor planning and paying the interest on carrying charge on that type of expense, eventually it gets to you. And one big builder back in Houston in the early to mid-80s just hollered uncle and called for a auction where he just sold them off at the highest bidder. And once that happened, it was like a dash of wet water hitting the market, because that brought the whole market to reality. And that's when that real estate market in Houston just imploded. So I think we still have that ahead of us. In places like California, I'm seeing it happening in Florida. I'm hearing about soft prices up in the East Coast and so forth. And I just hope the people that are in an area that's remained strong don't fall for the... you hear people say, well, our area is different. You know, we won't be affected by it. And once this thing gets in the full bore, it's going to affect everyone. You know, another thing to consider is that it's the real estate bubble for the last 5-6 years that created this wealth effect, that everyone felt richer because their houses were going up. They could go back every 1 or 2 years, go back to the well, borrow $50,000 or $100,000, and go out and buy a new Lexus and keep up with the Joneses. So it kept consumption up in the U.S. and kept the economy going. Yet now, when you go into an imploding, the wealth effect starts to work against you, and all of a sudden people feel poor, and then so you're going to see everyone starting to pull in their horns, and the economy is going to get weaker and weaker as that happens.
And I think the people have really forgotten what happened back in 1979 and 1980. And, of course, what had happened after Nixon took us off of the gold standard in 1971. And we still had to pay for the Vietnam War, so they just kept printing more and more money and borrowing more and more money, because you wouldn't want to raise the taxes and get people mad at you. So they massively expanded the monetary supply, and we began to get inflation. And we had inflation that was running up to 15%. And they had to actually raise the interest rates up to 20 to 21% to try to stop the inflation from completely destroying the American dollar. Well, when that happened, of course, you wanted to go out and borrow money to buy a house. 21%. Who could afford 21% interest? I mean, and of course, the bonds were going up. Everything where you wanted to borrow money was terribly, terribly expensive. And I know many of my friends, some of the well-to-do doctors in town, thought they were smart enough to play the system, and they put in big apartment house complexes and old condominium developments, you know, on borrowed money, and they were going to sell them and make just bushels of money. Well, of course, they got them built just about the time when the interest rates went up to 21%, and nobody could borrow them, could buy them. So then, of course, they had to keep paying the interest on the money they'd borrowed. And, of course, that kept going up, too. And month after month, you know, and first of all, you think it'll only be for a couple of months, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 months go by, and no hope in sight, and no buyers. And eventually, of course, you end up losing everything. And it happened, some of the, you know, finest physicians I know, but they tried to play a system they didn't understand. And I can see that happening down the line a couple of years, as they're going to have to raise our interest rates up to keep this whole thing from simply collapsing. Go right ahead, Ron.
That's right. You know, and when you look at the bond market, in fact, let's just try to go back to 1982 and kind of do an overview of how we got to where we're at, because it's important to understand that, see, the bond market is the foundation for the whole monetary system. Everything is built on the debt of the government and the corporation. So if the bond market fails for any reason, then it just collapses the whole infrastructure of the society. So we're heading for some serious time, and the bond market, to be quite honest, to me, has been the most perplexing thing for the last 20 years, because economists have talked for years that the bond market is the vigilante to stop inflation. In other words, when inflation started to get out of control, it would force interest rates higher, bonds would go down, people wouldn't invest money, and wouldn't loan money to a government when the currency was losing value faster than interest rates, so that forced interest rates higher, which ultimately put a quietus on the economy and slowed it down and created a recession, which brought things back under control. But see, for the last 20 years, that hasn't happened, has it? We've seen massive inflation like you've never seen in the history of the world, and yet we still have interest rates in the 4 and 5% range, and a few years ago they were, unbelievably low. In fact, in Japan, they're, 0% for a while. And so it's important, I think, to understand how that was made possible. You know, if you think about it, the value or the cost of anything is is a question of supply versus demand. And if you go back to the early 80s, the U.S. was still trying to come out of the recession that was created in the blow-off stage of the 70s and the Vietnam War and the, you know, the inflation it had there when gold soared to $800 and interest rates were 21%, which you've already referred to. And so we were threatening to go into a major recession. In fact, in mid-82, the economists were talking about a 29-style depression. And I remember on June the 21st, President Reagan came out and he basically said, damn the torpedoes, folks. We're going to print our way out of this mess. And that's, and the whole world caught on. Now, we've all heard this, the old saying that when the U.S. gets a cold, Europe catches pneumonia. And so if you think about it, if the U.S. was in trouble economically in the early 80s, then the rest of the world was even worse straits than we are, because they're dependent on their trade with us to survive. So what you saw happening is when we started the printing press to re-stimulate our economy, the rest of the world stepped in line to try to compete for this money or this new investment or consumption money. And so all the countries of the world were orchestrating their currencies lower versus the U.S. dollar, and they would do that by printing, selling their bonds into the market, diluting the value of their currency, using that money to turn around and buy U.S. Treasury bonds, which made the dollar look strong. So we went through this euphoric period of almost 20 years where the dollar was strong, interest rates were coming down because you had people standing in line to buy our deficits. For 15, 20 years, you never heard anyone talking or concerned about the U.S. deficits. We're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but as long as there were people willing to finance our folly, then the interest rates stayed low. But like any bubble, it can only go so long artificially till you reach a point. And so here we are, 20 years later. China has $1.3 trillion worth of our debt paper. Foreigners own 50% of our debt. The dollar's down 30-something percent in the last 5 years. They're becoming very unhappy with their bond investments. You know, in the early stages, they were very happy because they were using their profits from their trade to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. And when interest rates were going down, the bond values were going up, so they were making tremendous profits on their bond investments. So they were happy campers. But now that the dollar is going down, they're double losers because their bonds are going down in value as interest rates are forced higher, and the dollar is going down too. So they're losing on both ends now. And so you're starting to see more and more countries announce every day. You know, it was Kuwait and Arab Emirate republics who have said they're going to decouple from the dollar. China's doing the same thing. In fact, China, I just heard today, became a net seller of U.S. Treasury paper. So we're at the point now where it's getting harder and harder and harder for our country to get foreigners to keep financing our debt as our deficits get larger and larger and larger. So we're approaching a crisis point, and in the meantime, they're creating so much money, it creates the illusion that things are okay. The stock market is holding its own and going higher, but in real terms, it's probably collapsing because inflation is much higher than the government admits.
Inflation's about 11%. They're simply lying to you. And right. If they say, oh, well, you know, inflation is very low if you take out, you know, fuel and food and anything going up, why inflation is very low. And they juggle the figures. Figures don't lie. Liars figure. They do not want you to know that you're losing 11% of the value of everything you've worked for every single year. So if you invested in making 6%, you think you're doing real well, why you're actually losing 5%, and you're going to have to pay income tax on that 6% you're making. And until you understand that the people who are rigging this whole market are simply deceiving the public, and you'll find out what really happened, most people will find out when it's too late. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm simply a historian. But this is the reality of where we're headed, and we're headed towards terribly difficult times. Well, Ron, go right ahead.
Well, what's, you know, when you follow what's happening and you see where we're heading, and that the you know, if you abuse your creditor ultimately will cut you off, and that's exactly what's happening to America. So then you have to ask the question, where are we heading when, if the bond market, or we can no longer finance our deficits? In fact, I think they're camouflaging it right now as countries and investors throughout the world try to sell off their treasury bonds. In fact, what China and a lot of these countries are doing is trying to sell their bonds and use it to buy commodities or buy corporations. And that's one of the things, by the way, that I think is holding up the stock market, because they're buying the companies that manufacture the nickel and the copper and the gold and the zinc and everything else. So it's propping up some of the stocks throughout the world. But what they're really doing is dumping their bonds. Now, the point to remember is, if these bonds that are being dumped by investors around the world were allowed to go into the market unwanted, then the bond values or the price of that commodity would drop precipitously. So if the bond values drop, then interest rates would explode through the roof, similar to what happened back in the late 70s when interest rates got up to 21%, because no one wanted to hold the treasury bond because of inflation. So what I think is happening now is that the Fed is having to step in and monetize very secretly, because they can't allow the public to know what's going on. In other words, they're running the printing press full blast to buy up that unwanted paper to create the illusion that there's a demand for those bonds. Because let's face it, the whole monetary system is nothing more than a gigantic confidence game. So they have to lie and cheat and do whatever it takes to keep people having faith in the system. But I think what's happening right now, and it's just a temporary phenomenon, they're just running the printing press full blast to buy up that unwanted paper. But all that does is further discredit the value of the paper and accelerate the flight out of the dollar. And the only thing that is truly holding the dollar up today is the whole world is tied into the dollar system and has been for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And so before they can disengage and dump the dollar, they have to very methodically work their way where they can create something to replace it. If everyone tried to panic out of the dollar today, the whole world system would go down a black hole, and that's not what anyone wants. So you see, on one hand, the big G8-type countries are having to step in to help prop up the dollar, but I think what you're seeing is the smaller countries and investors seeing the handwriting on the wall, and they're starting to dump their dollars, and so it's going to reach a crescendo where they can't hold it up anymore, and I think we're getting close to that. So then the next question you have to say, what is going to happen when the whole system collapses? And I think that's, in fact, the very thing that tells me we're in the end game of this monetary system. When I say that, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve System that was created back in 1913, this fiat system, is the fact that there's so much publicity starting to come out about this new currency that you alluded to, the Amero. And I think that's where we're heading. But you know, I use the analogy, if President Bush tonight went on national TV and said, look, on your TV you have two buttons. How many of you, if you would like to...
Hold that thought, we'll be right just a moment with Ron Brown. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ron is saying, if President Bush were to go on to television tonight, and there were two buttons on the television, and he were to say, now, you go ahead and tell the rest of the story.
Okay. All of you who want to merge our nation into a new North American Union, merge the United States with Mexico and Canada, and create a new currency, and in effect do away with the sovereignty of the United States, push the Y button. Now, if you don't want that to happen, push the no button. I would suspect if you took that vote today, 90 to 95% of the people would say not no, but heck no. Americans are not willing or ready to give up their sovereignty to merge in with Mexico, or Canada for that matter. So in order to impose this draconian solution, and we have to have a draconian solution because the system that we have today is bankrupt. and it's going bankrupt, and it's just a matter of time that they can't hold the house of cards together. So they need the right financial crisis so they can then impose a solution that would otherwise be totally unacceptable to the American people. So I think that's why we're heading into a crisis over the next 1 to 2, you know, whether it takes 3 years or whatever. But as that crisis develops, then there's going to be a desperate plea from the American people, protect us, save us, do something. And so everyone will be looking for the white, the knight on the white horse to come in and save the day. And as David Rockefeller said, or 20 years ago, he said, the U.S. would not accept our new world order today, but given the right financial crisis, they will welcome us with open arms. And I really believe this debt crisis that's about to implode on itself is the crisis that they've been preparing us for the last 15, 20 years.
And I believe it's all created. I think it's been done intentionally. I think that they are spending money and sending money all throughout the world, and they have a solution. Now, whether it'll be the Merrill, or there's a fascinating article recently in Foreign Affairs magazine just last month, talking about the necessity of creating a new global currency. But this would be unlike other global currency. It would be not issued by central banks. It would be privately issued, gold-backed. In other words, this currency that would be utilized by everybody would be issued by some private group that you could depend on. And there would be gold backing for that currency. They alluded to the private currency on two occasions in the article, in the middle and then at the very end, although they only mentioned it would be gold backed in the middle of the article. The fact that they're talking about having to return to the discipline of gold means that they know the system is going to collapse, and they planned it that way. And of course, people who are holding the dollars, and not only in this country, but throughout the world, will, of course, lose everything they have. In fact, there was a fascinating article, and I may use this in my next newsletter, written by a Russian general who's tried to explain from a logical point of view why America would want to go to war with Iran. And he says it doesn't make sense. I mean, you go to war with Iran, you could even get involved in a nuclear exchange of some sort, or you never know how the war is going to end up. It could have terrible implications. But, he said, when you see this happening and you realize this is a danger, then you have to ask yourself, it's illogical for America to be considering going to war with Iran, because Iran will attack American forces over in the Middle East. Iran will attack our Navy. Iran will disrupt the world's oil supply and attack, Saudi Arabia and all those countries in there aligned with the United States. Why would the United States do this? And his conclusion was something I never expected. And that is, he said, because they know that this will collapse the economic system, and there's no way that America ever possibly pay off the debts that she has today. And by collapsing it, you will leave people all throughout the world holding dollars, and there will be no way to redeem them. And at that point, you can start it all over again and say to the people holding dollars, sorry, just terrible, terrible problem, but that's your problem, not ours. Fascinating insight from a Russian general. I hope you've been looking forward to that newsletter. We'll be back in just a moment here with Ron Brown as we try to make some sense out of what's going on today, and perhaps help you to begin understanding that every fiat money system throughout history has eventually collapsed. Why don't you go right ahead and pick the story up there?
Well, I guess, you know, we're going into uncharted waters, and whether it's the Amero or the... Something is going to happen because the system as we know it is collapsing. So then the question becomes, how do we as individuals try to protect ourselves from where we're heading? And I think the obvious thing is that you don't want to go into this monetary crisis and therefore monetary reform holding the very currency that's being repudiated by the world. And so that's dollar instruments. That creates a tremendous challenge for most Americans because that's the only thing that they know or understand. So it's like trying to teach an old dog new tricks. And yet, in order to survive this, or have any chance of surviving, I don't think any of us are going to be happy with where we're going if our system collapses and we lose this government, you know, this constitutional republic and government law that gives us freedom and protection from a tyrannical government. But all we can do is the best we can to protect ourselves and our savings as we go into it. And I think it means we have to get out of dollar investments. We have to learn to get out of the CDs and annuities and all the things that are denominated in dollars and get them into something that's tangible and real that will have value in the new system, whatever that system is. And gold and silver historically have been the vehicle that will bridge the gap between one failing monetary system, which in this case is the dollar. Well, it's going to be all the world currencies throughout the world probably, and get you across the abyss to the new system that will replace it. So gold and silver should do very, very well as we head into the crisis and more people start to seek a refuge from what the more and more people start to see, and that's the collapse of the fiat system. So you could see gold and silver just literally go through the roof over the, as we go into the crisis. The challenge, as I see it, Dr. Stan, is that once we get over the abyss and the new system is brought into place, now we're going to find out that we're under a different set of laws, and that new government, whatever it is, could at that point come in and say gold is now illegal for Americans or citizens to own, and then they could just confiscate it possibly. Who knows where that'll lead? So I think what I try to tell my clients is get as much gold and silver today as you can because it's going to prosper as we head into the storm. The challenge will be to sell off part of it too early. Just like it would have been nice to sell off some of your .com stocks.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Ron Brown. And before we go on, Ron, first of all, I want to invite callers at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But Ron, would you give your telephone number out so people would know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to, and about that financial analysis you offer?
Okay, it's a free analysis. Anyone would like a copy of it, just give me a call at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And our telephone number again, if you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Ron was just saying that people are going to have to get out of things that are dollar denominated. And, you know, people say, well, oh my goodness, you know, we go into a deflation, my cash will be king. That is if, of course, cash has any value at all as we get into a situation where the paper currency we've been using for many years returns to its true value. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and if you're out there, give us a call. Go, hi, Ray. Have a question or comment?
I understand. Yeah, your guess is Ron. Ron, I understand that the new ID cards, the smart cards, are supposed to come out within about a year or two. I've heard rumors about these cards that have these RFID chips in them, and you know, and we won't be able to buy or sell without these cards. I understand that's, it seems to me that's where it's headed, as far as the, you know, as far as what we can buy in the future years, you know, ahead. I don't know, but it just seems to me that, that we'll be, they'll issue us, smart cards, with all of our, where we can't buy or sell without them, and they probably have our medical records on them, and it just seems that they're going to try to do something like that.
Sounds a little scriptural, doesn't it? I don't think there's any doubt that that's where they're ultimately heading, and they're taking us there step by step towards this cashless society, and in order to buy or sell, you'd have to be, part of the system.
It's a possibility.
Go ahead, Dr. Sam.
Yeah, go right ahead.
What I tell people is, you know, we do what we can in our own understanding to try to protect ourselves, but buying a little gold and silver, I tell people, is not going to protect yourself in the long run from where we're heading. The only hope is going to be our faith in God, and that's what's going to give us the peace to go through the storm, because I personally believe that our nation and the world has turned away from God, and God has got to get his people back on their knees and realizing he is their only hope. And as long as we think a little gold and silver or egg in the woods is going to protect us where we're heading, we're not where we
are. No, I don't think so, because, you know, there are some things in the New Testament, I believe, that talk about how gold and silver won't do anybody any good in the final times. So, you know, it seems to me that, I think to have faith in God and ultimately, you know, really believe that God can do things in your life to, you know, to change it in the right ways, I think that's where it's at.
But make preparations as well, because you don't know when those end times are coming.
Right.
They may become 50 years from now.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, so I think making preparations is the process of seeking the truth. And as you seek the truth, and that sets you up in your relationship, that you're prepared to go through whatever we have to go through.
Yeah.
You know, back in when God brought the Israel out of Egypt, he took them immediately to a trap where they were trapped against the Red Sea, and any option that their own understanding could come up with would not save the day, would it?
Right.
No one had any idea that God could simply part the Red Sea and bring them to safety and then drown the enemy following them. So I think as long as we stay close to God in our relationship, he has plans and something we can't see right now, and that's what we have to lean on.
Yeah.
And remember, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. Anything else, Ray, before we let you go?
Well, you know, I not only am worried about that, but I'm worried about the economy, in the sense that, of course, we're being taken over by the Chinese. Everything we buy is from made in China. That's wrong. I don't think.
But it's part of the plan.
Yeah,
if you read the Earth Charter, you'll know that this is the new Ten Commandments. And point number 10 is equitable distribution of wealth within nations, between nations. We're following a master plan laid out by the master planners, who are occultists. That was written by Marie Strong, Mikhail Gorbachev, and of course by Stephen Rockefeller. When you understand behind everything are these spiritual forces, then it begins to make sense.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much. We've got an old friend on the line we want to get to.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. And this is somebody haven't talked to in a long time. Hi, Karen Lee.
Hi, Dr. Sam.
How are you doing?
You sound like you're a little under the weather this
morning. Well, you should have heard me 2 days ago. I haven't heard you. Karen Lee, for those of you who don't know, I used to be a regular guest on our program. She wrote a newsletter and certainly was known all over the country. And it's so good to hear from her. So did you have a question or comment?
Actually, a comment, and I have to say hello to Ron as well.
Hi there, Karen. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I wanted to add a side note to what Ron had been saying earlier in the evening about the housing slump. And I know this is something that he had been predicting for 4 or 5 years. I'd heard him so many times on the radio talking about this. But what people don't realize is, according to the new bankruptcy laws, when a homeowner goes into foreclosure and loses his home, and it goes back to the bank, let's say, for example, he owes $400,000 on that mortgage, and if the bank sells it for $300,000 or anything less than what he owes, at that point, the IRS comes in. They consider that $100,000 a gift, even though it didn't go to the homeowner, and now the person who has lost their home in foreclosure, they've probably gone bankrupt, maybe their credit is horrible, they now owe taxes on that $100,000 to the IRS.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that is incredible. I've never heard that before.
Yes,
but
that was ushered in with the new bankruptcy law.
Because we know that new bankruptcy law was put in because they knew it was coming down the line, and this whole thing is to impoverish our people. That is the master plan.
Oh, yes.
Read the Earth Charter, understand they're powerful people.
And what the banks are really doing, I have a very good friend here who has been a real estate broker for 42 years in California, and she's seen every kind of market in that time. She said what they are doing now, it's like they are forcing homeowners to go into foreclosure. Because she said if a home, again, I'll use a magic figure, let's say $350,000, this is what they owe on their mortgage, so they're going to try to sell the home. They get the bank to agree to a short sale to sell the home for less than what they owe. Well, even though the home may have been appraised at $350,000, all the banks in the state of California now have hired, I believe they call them real estate mediators. Anybody who has the real estate license can apply to the bank. And what they do is they will go out, they're not appraisers, but they will work for the bank. They get paid $350 for each house they assess, and they determine the value of the home. So, for example, let's say the home was appraised at $320,000, but the people owe $350,000. The real estate mediators now are coming in and say, oh, no, that home is worth $500,000. The bank won't take it, the sale falls apart, and the home goes into foreclosure. So it's like they are doing this intentionally so people cannot sell their homes on a short sale. And they're really forcing people into foreclosure. And then again, when the bank sells the house eventually, they're going to be liable to the IRS for the difference.
That is wild.
So it's really putting people in quite a mess. And as I say, here in Southern California, we are seeing the effects of this big time.
Well, I think we're only seeing just the very tip of the iceberg. And ladies and gentlemen, this is going to go on for several more long, painful years. And I fear that, you know, literally millions of people are going to lose their homes. They're going to be disillusioned. They're going to be really, I mean, where do you turn? You lost your job. You lost your home. You lost your car. And then what do you do? Well, I think this is how you get a revolutionary movement, how you get civil unrest. Why do you think that they are giving Halliburton $385 million a year to stand by to actually build concentration camps in America? They know what the people are going to do. They're anticipating every one of our thoughts and our frustrations. And believe me, they're already preparing on where they're going to put the people when there is civilian unrest. Go ahead. Anything else you want to say, Carolyn?
No, I'll let you two continue. It's a great show. I'll just put in a plug here for Ron. Everybody should be calling his number and buying silver. So have a great evening, both of you.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, it's good to hear from an old friend, Karen Lee. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question now, Ron, why do you prefer silver over gold?
Well, for the last 60 years, the world has been consuming the silver that was demonetized, if people don't remember, in the early 60s, Lyndon Johnson demonetized silver, took it out of our coinage. The rest of the world followed suit. So the bankers and the nations of the world, in effect, dumped somewhere around 8 to 10 billion ounces of silver into the industrial market. And what that simply did was glut the world with silver, destroy the incentive to produce, so the mining industry just dried up on a vine. So for the last 60 years, we've been consuming our seed corn. We've been consuming that monetary silver that has literally taken 4,000 years of history to accumulate. We are now down close to the bottom of the barrel at the very moment in time that people are losing confidence in paper money and starting to seek the refuge of gold and silver. But the simple fact is that we've consumed most of the silver. What most people don't know is that there's much more gold in ounces above ground than there is silver that could possibly come into the market. So they've manipulated the price of the futures market with all sorts of paper scams. You know, how many people are sitting there, and I would caution people that may be listening, if they're sitting there holding a certificate that says they have silver stored in some bank or some depository, they better make sure that silver is stored there, because I suspect, in fact, there was just a settlement this last week that was written up on Ted Butler. Morgan Stanley had to settle up with $4.5 million with their clients who they had sold silver to and supposedly stored it for them. The reality is they had not bought any of the silver, and they were charging them storage fees to boot. So when it came out, people started to ask for proof that their silver was there, and they couldn't show it or wouldn't show it, and they brought a class action suit against them. My guess is that once we trigger into the next leg up in gold and silver, you're going to see scandal after scandal after scandal surface with all these depositories that don't have the silver that people think they own. And that's one way they have held the price of silver down. People have bought paper silver, not real silver, and that met the demand. So I think there's a bunch of scandals that are going to hit the market as we go into this next leg up. And when that happens, you can see silver just explode overnight.
Well, we've got Paul calling from Arizona. Paul, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. And I was terribly disappointed when he raised the question I've been wanting to ask for years. He said, and he was interrupted, he said, the real deal, the real problem is going to be to sell off part of it early. And I've always been interested because, you know, gold is, or silver is just a reflection of the loss in the dollar.
Right.
So if you're trying to get some, I have thought about, well, okay, we'll go take a loan, and then we'll get the stuff we need right now, and then we'll pay it off with cheaper dollars later. I'm just scared to do it, and right. And I think rightfully so, but I wanted to know what you were going to say.
Well, what I was going to say is that as the silver explodes, pick a point where when you can sell half of it or a third of it, or depends on your situation, some portion of it, and get totally, totally out of debt, and take care of your needs that you perceive you're going to need. Do you need the 5 acres in the country? Do you need a storage, you know, food storage program? Do you know, all the things you might need. Do you need a new truck? Do you need, in other words, convert that those profits into something that's tangible before they collapse the system? Because once the system totally collapses and then we're under martial law of some sort, then you know, all the rules go out the window and they'll do whatever they damn well please.
Well,
so I think it's going to be important to sell off part of it while you still have a free market to sell into.
Well, you got to have something. I understand I'm going to be working in the secondary market, and I'm going to be going to people who've probably lost everything and saying, okay, I want to buy this and that from you. But I've always been curious about, you know, those things are going to be increasing in price as the precious metal does. And I've just wondered, how do I handle this? What what makes it so valuable to that guy that he wouldn't be raising the price on what he has? And I think it's going to be need on his part.
He's going to need something to be able to trade with, and once you've lost the value of the currency, you have to have some medium of exchange. And believe me, you're just going to have to keep listening to the programs. If we're still here, why, we'll try to get Ron on or others to let you know when to get out.
Well, Ron, give us a guesstimate of where you think these things are going.
Oh, my gosh. It's really this simple. If the dollar is heading towards zero, then the price of gold or silver, or for that matter, any commodity, is heading towards infinity.
Yeah, divided by zero, it's...
Well, you know, if the dollar is totally repudiated, then what would the price of, you know, in Germany in 1921...
Hold that thought. Go ahead, Ron.
In Germany in 1921, you went from three German marks to equal one U.S. dollar in, what, 1918, 21, somewhere. By 1923, it took 12.2 trillion marks to equal one U.S. dollar. And the dollar was backed by gold at that time, so you could extrapolate and say it went from 60 marks an ounce to buy an ounce of gold to 36 trillion marks to buy an ounce of gold. So obviously when you get to that state, the whole society is in a state of collapse and crisis and chaos. So, you know, we're going to have to sell some of our gold and silver to take care of our needs before that happens, or as that happens, at least.
Thanks so much for answering that.
Okay, Paul. Thanks so much for calling. All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Ron Brown. And Ron, why don't you go ahead? And you got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think we've covered the whole... Of course, we covered a lot of territory. I would just encourage people to start doing your own research, get on the Internet, start reading... the different economists on, like, Gold Eagle, and go to Dr. Stan's website and start reading about what's really happening, and turn off your TV set and quit listening to the Wall Street types who have no choice. Even the government officials, they have to lie to you, because the whole system is nothing but a confidence game. If they came out and told you the truth, the whole system would collapse tomorrow. So they really have no choice but to try to create the illusion that things are okay. But if you listen to that Primo's talk, you're going to go right down the tube with them. So you have to start thinking outside the box. Feel free to call me. This is what I do. You know, I'll be glad to chat with you for whatever it takes and send you some information and try to get you going in the right direction. But I think it's important for people to get a good portion of their assets out of paper-denominated assets, out of these financial markets that are the banks and that are going to be collapsing, and get it into something that's tangible and real that'll help protect them from where we're heading into. So it's really that simple. You know, just feel free to call me. I'll be glad to talk with you. There's no charge. I'm here to try to help people as best I can.
Well, Ron, well, just as soon as we get all of our stations back together, and we have about 6 or 7 stations that are pulling this program down tonight, I want you to get your telephone number out one more time. So just be a little patient. We'll be back in just a moment with Ron, and then we'll wrap up tonight's program here. Well, Dr. Stan, Ron, let's get your telephone number out one more time.
Hey, that's 1-800-595-0561, 1-800-595-0561.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Good Always night. A pleasure, Dr.
God bless. Okay, fine. And that was Ron Brown. And then, of course, this is the time when I want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there listening across America, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5 888-344-8927. You can join the Tape of the Month Club, or you can simply get our or monthly newsletter. I would appreciate hearing from you. And then, of course, for discussion of financial matters, I think my talk on the financial tsunami, and it's available in either DVD or VHS, is pretty good. Comes with an excellent syllabus that gives you the explanation of all of these fancy terms that are used, and what are hedges, and what is the carry trade, and what are derivatives, and what's M3, and why is it so important that the government doesn't want to publish it anymore. So, Sydney, that's the financial tsunami. And if you'd like to get it, our number is 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand the war in the Middle East, my talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, is really a summary of all of the wars of the last century, and it comes with an excellent syllabus that has all sorts of excellent and important information that you need to have, and many original documents you will never see elsewhere. So that's Iraq, the Untold Story, with a syllabus. The talk, Forbidden Secret. There is a secret. It's been passed down for 5,000 years. So secret that people were always afraid to talk about it. The talk, available in VHS or DVD, comes with the syllabus. And then, to put things into even better perspective, two very professionally produced DVDs. One, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The second one, Riddles in Stone. And they're both put out by Chris Pinto. They both give you a tremendous overview of the secret societies that were here at the time when America was founded. And all of these secret societies are still here. The Rosicrucians. Incidentally, Rhonda Burns has a new DVD and book out called The Secret. And if you look at the DVD on one frame, you only see it on one frame, but the word Rosicrucian is there. This is Rosicrucianism. Of course, millions of Americans, even many Christians, are getting swept up in the occult practices which are being introduced into the vast majority of our people. These things are being taught in our schools today as yoga or meditation. And, of course, people are opening their minds to demonic possession. There really is another dimension. There are demonic forces in our society. The story of the Bible, I believe, is true. There is a Satan. There is a master plan. They intend to bring about a world government, a new world religion, and, of course, a new world leader. We're on the edge of some of the most dangerous, frightening, exciting, rewarding times of our life, because I think we're going to see the fulfillment of many of the prophecies that were made thousands of years ago. I don't know how they're going to turn out, and I'm not taking a position on the rapture or other things, but certainly understand we are involved in a spiritual battle. Please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.